All right, welcome everyone. We're on the Tuesday VIP coaching call. Thank you everyone for being here. Do me a favor and just type a Y into the room to let me know that, in fact, you can go ahead and hear my voice. There should be a little box you can see if you're online. And if you're on the phones, usually we don't have a problem with you hearing me. So if you are online, just go and type a Y into the chat box and hit submit and also put your name and email in there just to let me know that you can hear me. Excellent. Franklin, Claire, Dwight, Neil, awesome. Everyone looks like they can hear me. Tim, Jerome, excellent. Thank you for being here. Beth, Paul. Paul, yes, I actually just got back from Las Vegas, not just, but about a week ago. We were up there and I was speaking at the Noteworthy Convention. And by the way, this is the 26th annual Noteworthy Convention. And it is everything that it is supposed to be and much, much more. It was 4 days of just notes. And I didn't realize the strong usage that can be achieved with notes, the usage, the benefits, really interesting stuff, really good stuff about notes in general. So at any rate, go to you can check that out next year, the Noteworthy Convention. .com. At any rate, let's get started. In this call, I want to talk to the newer folks for a little bit, to some extent, because I know there's a lot of new folks on the line. I also want to touch on partnerships, forming partnerships with people while you're investing, the do's, the don'ts, general opinion in my own investing, and with regards to mobile home investing, because other areas of partnership, other areas of real estate investing, I feel one way with partnerships, mobile home investing, I feel a different way. So at any rate, we're going to talk about that a little bit. We're going to talk about testing your area and the importance of testing your area, also visualizing. And then I have a special guest. I'm going to bring on a student who's doing a couple deals now in the northeastern states. And he's got one deal working now, his first one, and then also going through and talking to two separate parks and working out a couple interesting terms with parks. To the effect of he may have anywhere from a couple all the way up to about 10 or 12 deals sent to him by a couple different parks. And this is just completely out of the blue. Obviously, he did work to ensure that he could find these parks, that they liked him, that they wanted to do business with him. But definitely a viable source for everybody listening. So let's kind of get into it. That's what we're going to talk about. Let's start talking about it. By the way, if you do have any questions, that's what this call is about, for me to answer your questions. Obviously, you should be doing active things in the market. We don't make money simply by just thinking of what we want to do. We make money by doing it and then by speaking with sellers, speaking with buyers, putting those two together, and then making profit for many, many, many months. And in fact, if you don't want to make profit for many, many months, what you can do is once you create a lot of these notes that we're creating, you can go ahead and sell the notes, and you can sell them for anywhere from 60 to 80% of their value. So in order to create some quick cash for you or to fund your deal, note buying is something that we're probably going to talk about on not this class, but the next class that we have, just ways to do deals with note buyers, different strategies that we can use, and that in itself, I want just to plant the seed. Because if you do nothing with note buyer right now for the next 1 month to 1 year, 10 years, the fact that you know about it, and if and when it becomes apparent for you that you want to, hey, I want to create some quick cash, hey, I want to sell some of these notes, I want to broker, I want to buy notes, you know how to do that. So I always think information is super, super valuable. We're going to be talking about notes, not this week, but next VIP coaching call. But let's go into it. For the newer folks, if you've never been investing in real estate or if you are investing in real estate, I typically find it's a little bit easier to train people who've never invested in real estate before. But we're not so much in a real estate business when we talk about mobile home investing as we are in a people business. And I really do mean that, because when we're talking about mobile homes in parks, the price is subjective. When we're talking about mobile homes on land, we get into a little more concrete numbers because we have comparable sales data we can look at, what banks will lend, et cetera, appraisal amounts, et cetera. But when you're dealing in parks and even on land, the value, you know, we're less in a real estate business. We're more in a people business, because we purchase homes from sellers oftentimes in vulnerable situations. Vulnerable situations can mean anything. And sometimes we're talking with logical sellers that realize, hey, I need to, in the next 90 days to 6 months, need to sell. So anywhere from people pulling out their hair to people that are in logical understanding of what they can get for their home, but you're the best option out there, one of the only options out there, these are a lot of the times where our deals come from. But it's not from real estate. Money comes from real estate, or it really comes from the people, people getting up every morning working so that you don't have to. Now, with that said, we're in a people business, dealing with people sometimes in vulnerable situations, and that's the core of understanding your seller and making money in this business. When we talk with sellers, we're oftentimes more patient than a lot of our competition. You see, when you're a mobile home investor, especially dealing with mobile homes and parks, we educate sellers. We educate sellers because, let's face it, sellers of mobile homes, they don't exactly know what to sell their mobile homes for. They know what they bought it for. And let's say they paid $20,000 for their mobile home 5 years ago. Now they put $3,000 or $4,000 in it over those couple of years when they own the home. Now they're reselling the home, and they think that they can get $20,000 plus the $3,000 or $4,000 that they put into it. Mobile homes do depreciate. However, we care not so much about the depreciation as what we can get that home for from that seller. You see, so it's not so much of you want to get a great deal or you want to get a great mobile home. Sometimes we get great mobile homes from frustrated sellers. Sometimes we get ugly mobile homes from frustrated sellers. The seller in their particular situation, no matter what it may be, that is where you have to start playing the game from. So every seller that you talk to, realize that you're going to be getting them on a completely different chain of, did they just list their mobile home? Do they have a sign in their front yard? Are they thinking about selling their mobile home? What situation are they in? How much money do they have? What's their light at the end of the tunnel? So understanding that we're in a obviously in a people business, that is huge. What I'd like you to do for the next 90 days is to stretch, is to get up a little bit earlier, to go to bed a little bit later, and to make sure that you give this business everything that it deserves. If you can, 7 days a week. If not 7 days a week, then 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, ideally. But on the weekend is typically going to be times when you're setting up appointments or when you are going to appointments to then speak with sellers. And that's where a lot of our emphasis is put. It's having sellers call us, because you want to be the ultimate authority for mobile home sellers in your area. You want all the investors to know just what you do. You want all local realtors to know what you do. You want mobile home park owners to know what you do. The park management, the sellers, home owners. But let's be real. No one knows who the heck you are right now. Okay, and if you're starting this business, they shouldn't. You're just starting. No one knows who you are. You haven't built up a reputation, be it good or bad, yet. Excuse me. And so no one knows who you are. So after about 60 to 90 days of 5 days a week, 6 or 7 days a week, talking with sellers, planting seeds with those sellers, speaking with park managers, networking with other park owners, with realtors, with investors, with repo lots, with dealers, you will become a source for people to talk about mobile home deals that are available, for sellers to call you, for buyers to call you, and you will be at the right place at the right time. Now, in addition to being at the right place at the right time, you have to know how to help sellers. That means the options that a seller has to sell their mobile home. How can they sell their home? They can do a lot of different things. They can sell it with a realtor. They can sell. You can purchase their home. You can help them find a buyer for the home. They can put a couple signs in their yard. They can do many different things. They can foreclose. They can just give the home back to the park, depending on the situation they're in. They can sell for pennies. They can sell for payments. You are here to educate that seller. So two things we talked about, being at the right place at the right time simply because you're dominating your area and people are calling you, leads are finding their way to you. And again, this happens, like we said, over 90 days, but I do want to make sure that you have your hand up and say, yes, I commit to doing this for 90 days. I understand if in this next 7 days, in this next week, I don't make a deal, that's obviously understandable. So 90-day stretch is what is a commitment that I want from everyone listening. Because if you're not willing to do that, then, you know, don't bother. I mean, you may get a deal, ideally in your first 30 days. And with that said, whoop-de-doo, you got one deal. Doing one deal is easy. Anybody can do that. A, you know, blind squirrel gets a nut every now and then. But I don't want you just getting one deal every now and then. I want you to have a business to where sellers and buyers are calling you, other folks are calling you, you're constantly receiving leads. And we didn't even talk about marketing at all or advertising at all. So there's definitely a lot of ways that sellers can get in touch with you. And we that's the whole idea of being at the right place at the right time. But in addition to that, you have to know which offers you can make to sellers, what offers you can make. And then the third thing is you have to understand the sellers themselves, which is the most important thing. I can teach anybody, a trained chimp, how to market, how to advertise, maybe not how to network correctly, but to then receive calls from sellers. But if you don't know what to do with them, you're not going to make too much money. So you have to know how to help that seller. Okay, that's the second thing. And then the third thing that you really have to understand is the rapport and the follow-up with sellers. I can't tell you how many people back in 2007 when I was teaching a local RIA in Florida, which is a real estate investors association, so many investors thought that real estate investing was putting out hundreds of offers, as many offers as you can make with realtors, by yourself. If you're not making offers, you're not making money. And people take that too literally. This is a people business, and I can't even think of how many times that a seller has sold to me when they've got a higher price with someone else. But I really can. I think it's probably under 30 times that I've heard a seller say, John, I have an offer for a little bit more money than you or for more money than you, but I like you and I trust you more, and I believe I'm going to get my money with you more than these other folks, whether they're these other folks are other investors, end users, brokers, whatever it may be. They did the deal with me. And I'm not saying that's because I'm special, but because of the rapport building, the follow-up. And long story short, if we want to boil this down all, you know, to down to the lowest common denominator, the sellers liked me and they trusted me. And that's huge. And that comes by doing what you say you're going to do, whether it be calling the seller back, being honest with that seller, not trying to nickel and dime the seller and telling them all the options that they have. It's so weird that we live in a world that just by being honest and transparent and educating sellers, really educating them, you know, whether, and by that I mean, listen, Mr. Seller, if you don't do this deal through me, that's fine. I think you should make as much money as you can. Now, that being said, I know what buyers are paying in the market. I know what you can get for the home. I know what we can resell the home for. Here's what we're going to do. Here's the offers we can make you. And most of our deals, they don't come from people instantly agreeing with us on the spot. A lot of our deals come from sellers over time saying no to us and then us following up or them following up with us, and then they decide to do the deal. Why? Because initially the sellers were a little taken back. And they say, you know, to me, this is what I think that they say, and I've heard this twice before. After we did the deal, I was talking with the seller candidly, and they said, listen, John, when you first told me these options to purchase my home, I thought they were low. Now, you said them in a way that I completely understood why you were saying it, but I thought, being, you know, in a college-educated person that I am, I can remember this exact conversation, and the seller said, you know, I thought I could sell my home for more. I mean, I understood what you were doing. I thought one way or another, cash or payments, I could sell my home for more. And what they found out after about 2 or 3 months, which really is a short time, you're talking about lining up a buyer that wants your mobile home in your condition, in that park, on that corner for that price. And we always offer, you know, pretty fair prices. So it's not like we're super low as investors. So we're offering fair prices. This particular seller said, John, you know, I thought I could get more. Lo and behold, I couldn't. And that's why I called you back up and we did the deal. So a lot of our deals come, you know, from that exact situation. But you have to understand what buyers will pay in your area. So that's the talk I wanted to make for the brand new folks, to understand that we're in a people business, and for you to, I want you to stretch for these 90 days. Now, moving along, let's talk about testing, because you have to test your local market. You can believe what I say. Hey, you know, I'm John. I'm the all-powerful guru. I'm going to tell you to, you know, offer this guy wants $8,000 for his home. You know, offer him a couple thousand, offer him $800. Now, I can tell you to do that, and I'm not saying do that. I can tell you to do that because I'm the quote-unquote expert, but you're not going to really believe me. You being the person listening to my voice, you're not really going to believe me that, you know, that is the offer you should make to a seller. You're going to say, John, I don't want to insult this seller. Where are these numbers coming from? You know, I mean, am I going to make them, am I just making blanket offers at 10 cents on the dollar from what people are asking? No, and that's not what we want to do. We do want to make sure that we know the seller's action threshold, meaning the lowest point that they'll take. Okay, and we want to know why that's the lowest point they'll take. Do they have to pay off bills? Or do they have an underlying mortgage on the home? Do they have to put their kids in school, travel across the country, pay back taxes, get their car out of tow? So with all that said, I want you, the person listening to my voice again, to test your local market. Okay, test your local market. Find buyers in that local market. All right, so I'd like to bring on a guest right now, Josh. And he is going to be talking about a deal he's working on. Now, this is a great little deal because we'll actually talk about it, but it's shuffling paperwork around, and it's making some money. It's obviously investing, but it's a really cool little deal. I say little deal, but it's pretty significant. And then we can also talk about working with park managers, as I teased everyone listening a little bit earlier. So let me make you available, if I can figure this out. Oh, I didn't do it. Joshua, can you hear me?
Yeah, John, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Excellent. All right. Figured that out. Okay, thank you for being on the line, and I think your deal is really, really fascinating because it doesn't involve work. We're paying way more than we usually would, meaning over $10,000 to purchase a mobile home in a park. But, yeah, let's go ahead and, if you wouldn't mind, kind of recap the deal, and then we'll go from there.
Sure. This was a deal I picked up on Craigslist. The home was listed for $13,500. It was a two-bed, one-bath. The pictures looked like a really nice home. So, I figured I'd call the guy up, see what his motivation was. Speaking to him for a while, he is a retired Marine. And he had fixed his home up pretty much for him and his wife to live in, you know, for the rest of their lives until her job was transferred to Ohio. He was previously stationed out there, and then they had moved this way for her employment, and now, funny enough, are heading back the same direction. So in speaking with him, the home was really the only thing keeping him here. But despite that, I didn't get a vibe that, you know, he was ready to go tomorrow. Because in speaking with him, he said he had somebody offer him $11,500, which was only $2,000 off his asking price, and he didn't take it. And then somebody offered him about $4,000 down with payments, and he turned that away as well. He had done a rent-to-own previously when he moved from Ohio to New Jersey and found himself spending about 90 days trying to get the person out of Ohio property after they didn't pay him. So I felt he had a good reason to be motivated, but he just didn't seem motivated. But sure enough, we ended up calling back. We talked a little more, and at the time, John wasn't very available due to his travels for me to get him on the line, and I really wanted to speak to you before we put this deal together. But Ralph was real patient with the situation, and honestly, I just played John as, you know, the bad guy superior who was nowhere to be found and not the way I'd like to conduct business. So it doesn't hurt to reach to that higher power, that partner who is, you know, deflected off of yourself. That way, you know, you don't feel personally attacked in any way, shape, or form. It's not on you. And then what came about is in talking to Ralph, he was open to payments, and he and I started to at least put some things down on paper. He was looking for $2,000 down, but would take at least $1,500. He had a few things to get out of storage, so he wanted to be able to do that and, you know, get himself back to Ohio. He was looking for about $250 a month, and I was aiming at $250 a month with nothing down. So from there, I told him basically we could probably work something out where we would get him at least what he was asking or above. And as I originally said, he was asking about $13,500. And in the end result, his total to him, if I do the numbers here correctly, I think is $15,000. And do you want me to go into that structure, John?
Yeah, that would be great. So far, we're dealing with a seller who isn't very motivated, and the reason is I think we kind of talked about this, but that he was in a cushion. I mean, he had the money. His wife was in a different state, but he was living comfortably, and the motivation necessarily wasn't there. So he was a logical seller. And he was asking $13,500, and so yeah, if you wouldn't mind going into the financing of it and what we structured, and then ideally what can the home will resell for, conservatively.
Sure. And just to reiterate, there was nothing really needed on this home. You know, he had this all redone himself. You know, nice kitchen, good appliances, hardwood floors, central air, and then now they've even added the gas lines to put in, natural gas as opposed to the propane that's there. But we offered him $1,500 down, and then we deferred any payment to him for 6 months. You know, we would take over the lot rent, but as far as his monthly payment to him, that's deferred for 6 months. So beginning May 15th of 2013, we'll begin to pay him $200 a month for 67 and a half months. So that $200 a month, the 67 and a half, that's his $13,500 he was asking for. Tack on the $1,500, and essentially he's getting $15,000 for the property. So we're paying him above what he was asking in the long run. We are looking, I have this advertised right now for $3,000 down, and conservatively $350 a month for 72 months. And basically I have it, you know, structured either way. If they come with, they need to come with less down, I'm willing to go as low as $2,000 down and structure the rest back into the payment. It gives them, with the lot rent, it's a little bit higher lot rent here in New Jersey compared to surrounding states, and it's about $563 a month. And then the township actually adds a water fee of $1,650 a month minimum. So I don't have the figure in front of me what the minimum water range is, but if you don't surpass that, you have to pay at least $1,650 for the water. So essentially, they'd be coming into a home for about $930 a month total, So that'll put us total with the 72 payments and the money down. I'm looking at about around $28,000 on the resale.
And so $28,000 on the resale. Your $1,500 out to give to the seller, hoping to get back two or three. So even if you let's say that we break even on the move-in fee. So there's you got your money back. There was a little bit of holding cost there, and you make nothing on the move-in fee. You just get everything out that you've already put into it. Now for the next 67 months, you're making about $150, and then after that, for maybe 5 months, you're making the full $350 profit. Not a tremendously earth-shattering deal, but again, you're shuffling things around, and you're putting in a great buyer because that home is so beautiful. I mean, that, like you said, it doesn't need any repairs; it's to the nines. And another key thing, and let me know, if I'm forgetting or anything, but I think the fact that that this is your first deal, and the fact that you got your foot into this park with Dan, and now. Now you can speak to this park manager more on a level playing field, but you've already proven yourself as someone that's honest, reliable. You're going to put somebody good in there. And if you wouldn't mind, we already talked a little bit about the working with park managers and asking them what they have available. And this kind of two things recently happened to you in two different parks. But I would kind of like to hear in your own words, I think you know where I'm going, but obviously working with the park managers, what do you have working now within this park, in the same park, and then in a different park with regards to the park managers?
Sure. Within the current park, one, just in looking for leads in general before I even talk to the manager, I probably picked up seven or eight other for sale by owners. But then in meeting with the manager, Dan, he basically asked me one question, which is, what is it that I do? And I think that was really kind of a size me up question, just to see that I wasn't maybe a fly-by-nighter, but that I was serious about what I was doing. And I just, began to describe it to him. And he almost kind of cut me off and just said, let me show you what I got. And he has seven homes right now that he has basically wants what he has into them, which it's a range, but basically it's less than $3,000 each. So, but varying amounts there, some needing more work than others. And then there's one that's more around $5,000, and the only reason is he's already bought the new central air and heating for it. So he said if I didn't for some reason want those pieces of equipment, he'd take them out. But he's kind of just waiting on me at this point, to be able to go ahead and show us those properties. He's had one or two people in there before. One guy did wrong by him, so he's kind of stopped feeding him, but I got a very good rapport with him now, and matter of fact, got a call of a home that's even probably a step up from the one I just purchased. Same kind of situation. This individual is going to Florida for school in January and is looking to go, so we'll see what comes available in there, as well as the fact that in buying this home, I've met what I call the Mary of the park, and that just happened to be her name. But, here's the 12-year resident that can basically tell you as much, if not more, than the park manager. So besides the manager themselves, speak to the neighbors and the people walking by. From there, there's another park that resides closer to my home. Just happened to stop in, kind of told them what I did. I didn't hear back from them immediately, but they had another company, a higher manager to speak with. But in 3 weeks, they called me back, and we met again. They actually have five to six homes that they're willing to give me for free. The difference with this park is that there are rules where the what they call the setbacks, the new setbacks they have, they wouldn't be able to accommodate, you know, the homes that they currently in the pads they currently have. So essentially, in layman's terms, if they pull a home out of there, they can't replace it. So anything they have in the park, which is, you know, some older modeled homes, has to be repaired. This management company recently took over in the last year this park, and has worked hard to get the vacancy back up because the previous manager just let it go. But they're willing to give me a 1 to 2 months lot rent, and that was just in verbal conversation. You know, we walk those properties, and John, I'll be getting you that information so you can take a look at what we have there. So you find the right place because, you know, just so you don't think you walk in everyone and everything's peachy, the first one I walked into, they basically shot me at the door before I could, you know, get comfortable. So it varies, but yeah. when you find the people that understand what it is you're doing and know that you're serious about it, it opened up some doors, and I'm very excited about, you know, what's to come.
We have a question came in from Doug in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I think that's actually a pretty good question too. How long did that take you from when you were starting? And you said that the first park that you went into, you were shot down. Basically, when you went into the door, you were telling them that you're an investor, and they shot you down, which is really a good story for your first deal. I mean, or for your first home or park. But how long did it take after that? And how many parks do you remember going through? But how long did it take is the question from Doug to get to this first deal and to where you are right now from when you first started?
Well, from when I first started with you or from when I first started?
I guess it started first. Well, it started with, the formula.
Okay. It probably took me about 2 or 3 months, but it's not based on the fact that, I went through a lot to do it. I think to give you an idea of where I was, I'm a full-time worker. So I just happened to be lucky enough that they let me work a four-day week, that I can have a Friday to get out and about, assuming I also have two children of ages 6 and 16 months. So, my wife is a full-time worker as well, and she's a five-day a week. So sometimes it comes down to schedule as far as, can I drop the kids off? Can my mother-in-law watch them? God bless her because she's supportive of that. My parents and other family members don't live particularly close to me, so I lean on her a lot. But from there, when I first started, I think I really feared the lot rent around here. I'm in southern New Jersey, in case anybody does not know where I'm located. Just literally outside of Philadelphia. I can beat to a bridge to Philly in about 30 seconds. But the deals that I've done prior to the formula, I've done from quite a distance. I've done Delaware and Dover, which is about an hour and a half from my house, and I've done Berks County, Pennsylvania, which is 2 hours from my house. And while I don't discourage you, from traveling, if you can do it close to your home, I tell you, I sleep a lot better with a home that's vacant but only 30 minutes away right now as opposed to, 2 hours away. So I tried to go back to those routes of Pennsylvania and Delaware because at first I figured, if I get into the lower lot rents, I think deals were just going to come along. And I think I was disappointed in that, and it didn't come to fruition. And finally I had to myself mentally come to the fact that, I'm going to make this work here no matter what kind of time it took. So it was just a matter of getting down to it and following John's steps. And then, I went in and I met some managers. For me, I kind of went at it in a different aspect just because it made me feel a little more comfortable. I own a realtor's license, though I don't show homes unless it's for a friend, and I've never listed a home. I do it more for the MLS access, the data, the expired and withdrawn listings. But I went in there, and that was one of the first things that came out of my mouth, was that I was a realtor. Why? Because I wanted them to know that I'm a professional, and that as a realtor, just, even though I'm not acting as one in a transaction, my license is on the line if I do not act ethically. And so I feel like I have more to lose in that. And I felt that by, if needing to, I would explain that so they would know, you know, hey, I'm here for real. So the time element was really on me more than, I'd say, you know, the formula. It could work faster or slower for others, but, you know, for me it was just saying, you know what, I got to get to doing what I need to do here because I want to be doing this close to home. I hope that answers the question.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the takeaway I got from it, and this is something I've seen, and it's been amazing for my own eyeballs to witness from a bunch of different folks, everyone has their wall. And, you know, how much everyone has their wall of giving up and try looking for the next shiny object. You were very invested in what you were doing. You have a family, and you were invested, obviously, in the formula. And making it work was, and again, it was only two or three months to when you got that first deal, and now the gates are really opening wide for you. And we'll see in the next few months, you know, how you do and, you know, what deals actually come to fruition. But everyone has that wall, and I know because we've talked personally, I feel when you were pretty close to it, but never once was there, at least that I heard, was there a give up or was there a concede or anything like that. And I've heard that from person after person where it's taken them longer than 50 leads to get to their first deal. And if we, you know, if we just want to classify it as how many leads did you call to get to your first deal, if you're expecting a number and you get to that number without results, it's really up to you, up to the person, you know, if you want to continue. But ultimately, there's going to be a deal for you if you're at the right place at the right time. You know, if there's not now, then there will be in, I don't know, a week, 2 weeks, you know, 3 weeks, depending on the amount of inventory you have in your local area and, you know, how well you network, which in the beginning you were doing, I mean, you still are doing it, and you're still building that up. But, yeah, I feel like you definitely hit the head on, or you hit that question. So kind of another thing as well, and wrap this up with Joshua, but those for folks listening and saying, well, five or six deals in a park, you know, that's fine and dandy, but how do I do that? I don't want to purchase five or six, have all those holding costs. It's important to remember, and Josh, you can kind of agree or disagree here, but the park managers, I think that there's three different types of parks, and I wrote an article about this. The first one being the big mega corporation that owns half of the United States, mobile home parks. And then there's the other, you know, it's just a nationwide company. There's the second group of mobile home park owners that are, they're not corporate, you know, they're somewhat locally owned, and they will work with investors, usually the big corporate offices. They don't work with investors, or they're not happy. They're not as easy to work with investors. And then on the third group, there's the mom and pop. And I think when you get to the third group, the mom and pop mobile home park owners and the local mobile home park owners, you're dealing with people that you can have a beer with or that you can sit down with, and they understand what you're doing. And at the end of the day, it's will this person, will this investor, you know, help my mobile home park? Can I trust them? Do I like them? So with all that said, it's not unrealistic that we're going to work out a deal where whether you purchase one mobile home of this package of 5 or 10, or you purchase 3 or 4 or 5 or 6, it'll be structured in a way that you can maybe get into one home, start doing the repairs, pay the lot rent after a month or two, and then resell it. And then at that point, do the next one and start paying on that one. And then you go to the next one and start working on that one. So you can take options on these properties, and simply dealing with the park owner or the park management, you know, they're the ones that are taking the risk on you. So as long as you do what you're going to do and you say what, or you do what you say, and you set up the deals correctly, and you know that there's adequate profit in there for you, you can really structure some really great terms with parks. And at Jim, in California, that is one of the most lenient states with regards to parks and them giving you concessions. It seems like the parks out there will just, if you ask for, you know, 1 or 2 months of free lot rent because you're buying a home in that park, they'll give you 3 or 4 without even asking. And we can talk more about that, Jim, or other California investors. But around the country, you know, park owners and park management, they understand the game and they want to work with you. So it can be really quite fun. So anyway, Josh, did you feel that same rapport? I mean, was it kind of this was it a flexibility, or were the park managers or the park owners, were they saying, you know, these are the homes, these are the prices, take it or leave it, all or nothing? Or was it, you know, what do you think? What do you want to do? You know, bring something to me, and then we can talk about it.
Yeah, I think you know you got the right person when you do feel that it's more than just the business. There's that relationship there, and especially with Dan. Not that I didn't feel the same from Diana, but Dan's actually in talking with him. I mean, we went off into conversation, you know, back to his past, my past, and he's grown up with the mobile home. I mean, his parents owned it. He still lives on the one that he manages now. And I think when they really have the feel for what it is you're doing, you'll feel that comfort. It doesn't become an interrogation. It becomes a conversation. And that's when you know you're really making headway with someone.
Well put. Awesome. Thank you, Josh, for being on the phone. Was there anything else that you wanted to add?
No, this was great, John. I appreciate your time. I appreciate you allowing me to share this with everybody. And, you know, just for those out there, you know, keep plugging along. This seems impossible, I know, at times. And there's other times when it seems easy. But I think once the snowball, you get it pushed up to the top of the hill and it starts rolling down the other side, your momentum's gonna take you places.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Josh. And you'll get those emails off tonight, and I will
get them over. I'm in front of my computer right now.
Okay. If in an hour I don't see them, I'll shoot you over a text or give you a call.
Sounds great, John. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you so much. Okay, let me see what questions came in. I should have probably did that again. We're hanging up with Josh. All right. Sarah, you sent in 2 questions, but for some reason it's just gibberish. If you can send them with those again, those would be great. Jim, you asked, how close to the parks do you stick up bandit signs? Does the park manager tend to get upset about that? Yeah, they can. Use just your, you know, when it's, and I don't want you to say don't ask me, because you can obviously ask as many or as much questions as you want. But with that, the normal train of thought about you putting a We Buy Homes or a We Buy Mobile Home sign, you know, right at the park office, or do you just put it across the street from the park so that way when everyone is coming out of the park, they see your sign dead ahead on whatever piece of land that is? Or do you go down the street and at the stop signs or the traffic lights, do you put your signs there? That last one, that is my recommendation to you. Not in the park, not across the street from the park, but, you know, a half a mile, a quarter mile. However, when you're coming out of that park and you have to go left or right, wherever those roads dead end or stop or there's an intersection, the sign's right there. That way everybody coming home and going to the park or leaving will see your sign. And really that's how you can be sure to dominate, such as Monday morning or Friday afternoon, You can put your sign out there, and everybody going to work is going to see that sign. So you know, even if it's out there for a day, you know everyone that came and or went to work, they saw your ad at least once. And those are mobile home people. So, you know, that is the answer for you for how where to stick your mobile home signs. But, yeah, not in the park. And really, like we were just talking about with Joshua, you know, mobile home park managers, you're going to realize when you talk to your first couple, like Josh went into his first office and they said, get the heck out of here. We don't deal with you. And that's, I don't know if it was those words exactly. I don't think they cussed, but it was pretty rough. And, but that was, so you're going to run into those folks, not very often. And then you're going to run into other folks that want to, you know, show you everything they got and spend 3 hours with you. Typically, you're going to get somebody in the middle that will help you, will tell you their inventory that they have. But let's face it, they're people. They got tons of things going on. You're going to have to follow up with them and remind them, hey, do you remember we met a few weeks back or a couple days ago? And I just wanted to touch base and see if you had anything for sale again. You know, I know that you didn't a few days ago. I just wanted to check now. Or if you go into that park office and this one lady, this one park manager, I know she liked certain types of donuts because she had them there. Or this other lady, she liked Winnie the Pooh characters, and I went ahead and I brought in little, just really little trinkets or a box of Dunkin' Donuts, under $10, and that was a silly little thing that I've done a number of deals in both of those parks that I just said, and those are really only two kind of times that I've kissed ass, so to speak, but it works, you know, and it's not so much kissing, but it is you being in their minds, and you saying, hey, listen, you know, I was here once before, I'm here again, and I'm going to keep coming back until you give me something. So at any rate, that was tonight's class, and we've been on the phone for about an hour now. Thank you, Josh, for coming on the line. I hope everyone gleaned a little bit more forward process, how we work with Josh's talk, also the possibility that although this can happen in 30 days, which it does, sometimes it takes longer than that, which it does, whether you pass up a deal, you didn't see it, you said the wrong thing to that seller, you're going to have to wait again in another couple days or another couple weeks until you get that seller that's just pulling out their hair. And remember, that seller that's frustrated, that's a top priority seller. That's who I want you to do business with for your first deal. Now, we did a deal with Joshua where it was a logical seller, but he wanted to move. The deal worked itself out. He understood exactly what we were doing because we were transparent with him, and it all worked out, and it was fairly simple. And like we said, we did a few things wrong by not – I wasn't available. I was at the Noteworthy convention. I was on the road. And we couldn't talk to the seller. So we did a few things wrong, but lo and behold, you know, the seller was still there. The seller was patient. And as soon as we were able to speak together, we all, you know, put down on paper, you know, or had a meeting of the minds what we wanted, what he wanted. And we painted a picture of what it could be. It worked for us. And it worked for the seller, and that's how we made the deal happen. Sometimes we have a buyer lined up. Sometimes we don't. In Joshua's case, we did not have a buyer lined up. But the home's beautiful, so it shouldn't take hardly any time to sell. But getting a little bit off of the track, Sarah, I don't see those questions resent. That is that's all I see. Everyone else, thank you so much for being here on this call. Have a great week.